So greetings, everyone. Welcome to Sabbath Services, sponsored by the Christian Biblical Church of God. And we are dedicated to restoring original Christianity for today, as well as church at home. Today, there are a lot of things going on that are fulfilling prophecies, some of the things that we know of, and some of the things we don't know of. First of all, we understand that Satan is deceiving the whole world, so we need to realize that there are many false alarms and difficulties coming along that can get in the way and interfere with our understanding of the truth. Even one woman wrote me and said she thought the first resurrection was coming in 2024. Well, I don't quite yet think so. I told her that there's no new temple because that has to come first, and the last 7 years hasn't yet kicked in, as we will see. But many other things are developing and moving quickly to pave the way. And what we need to understand is it's going to be a time of the greatest time in the history of the world. Now, let's start out by doing this. We've heard in the past, and we preached before, that all religions will get together. Well, they're making progress of it, and Pope Francis looks like he's going to hold the office of false prophet, but maybe his successor or the successor after that one. So there's still quite a bit of time left, as we will see. But here, Pope Francis calls for interfaith prayer, each to his own God. Indeed, the Roman Catholic Church organized a day of prayer and fasting addressed to all believers of all religions. Well, now stop and think. Even atheism is a religion, okay? And it was under the auspices of the Higher Committee for the Human Fraternity to pray together. Now, this was initiated some 2 years ago when Pope Francis and one of the leading imams from Oman, they got together where they were building a interfaith worship at that country. Okay? So, Catholics, Muslims, and people of other religions who are of no religion were all encouraged to pray for hers or his own God or personal ideal. Now, for what? To try and stop the pandemic of the Chinese virus. Well, even Kenneth Copeland, I saw him on television, where he was standing up and commanding the virus to leave and to go. Well, after he did that, there were more cases. So apparently, his command wasn't heeded. Now, continuing in this report that was given to me a couple of weeks ago, the document on human fraternity blurs the distinction and changes the meaning of fraternity, extending it to the relationships between peoples of different religions, as if Muslims and Christians were brothers and sisters praying to the same God. Now then, this brings about an ever-expanding Catholic trajectory. This day of prayer witnessed the participation of believers of all religions, but also from those who do not believe, united spiritually to pray to their divinity or ideal by a pleading for the end of the pandemic. Each participant was called to address his or her ideal in a spirit of fraternity that embraced everyone. What is at stake is, theologically, is enormous. Now then, there's going to be quite a few things taking place. Now, the question is, when did this really begin? So let's come back to Revelation, the sixth chapter, and let's look at something for just a minute. Because the first seal opened is the false prophet, and he's dressed in white. And isn't it interesting that the Pope is dressed in white in this picture? So, Revelation 6, and let's pick it up here in verse 1. And I looked when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard one of the four living creatures say, like the sound of thunder, come and see. And I looked, and behold, there was a white horse, and the one sitting on it had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he went out conquering and to conquer. So, very interesting. How can you conquer with a bow and no arrows? So this shows that this is probably the false prophet. Now, what was the first movement of the Catholic Church toward all other religions? Vatican II under Pope John Paul XXIII. Okay. Now, they began reaching out to all religions, continuing to do so, and they even include in some of their addresses to the Hindus, Diwali. That is a feast of the Hindus. Now, is this when the first seal was opened? When that first occurred, that's what I preached. Then I thought later, no, that couldn't be it. Maybe that's too soon. But they've been continuously on this ecumenical movement to try and bring all religions together, which is really quite a tremendous thing when you understand it. Continuing in this report, moving beyond the parameter of the biblical faith, Roman Catholicism legitimizes prayers to other deities or religious ideals, silencing the prophetic message of the scriptures. Well, yes, it does in a way. It doesn't silence it because it was prophesied that it would happen. Now let's come to Revelation 13. Now we'll talk a little bit about the beast power in a little bit, Revelation 13, but let's come down here to Revelation 13 and verse 11. Okay? Verse 11, Revelation 13. And I saw another beast rising out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, but spoke as a dragon. And we know the dragon is Satan, the devil. And he exercises all the authority of the first beast before him. Now, what does that mean? The first beast is the world government. So this means that this second beast also has worldwide authority. And he causes all the earth and those who dwell therein to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. We'll get to that to answer that a little bit later. But then, this is moving on, and we will see it taking place even more. All right? I got quite a few reports to read, and some of them are going to be quite astounding. Globalists just revealed that the great economic reset is scheduled for 2020. Now, that means resetting it, but what it's going to be like, it's going to be a digital currency at first. All currencies will be digitized. Okay? Now then, that will ultimately lead to the mark of the beast. So, Someone sent me this that was done 12 years ago in 1998. Professor has first world silicone chip implant. Now today in Sweden, they have virtually no money in the way of bills and coins. Everyone has a chip in the right hand. Okay? Verse 18, and he causes all, the small and the great, the rich and the poor, the free and the bond, to receive a mark in their right hands or in their foreheads. And isn't that interesting? Okay? Now the Greek says upon, but meaning upon, but within. And where they put the chip is right here between the thumb and the index finger. And many businesses in America have that, where they can just open doors, they can be identified and everything. And the digital cash will make it possible for your cell phones to touch each other and will transfer funds from your account to the account of the one that your phone touched. Now, I wonder how that's going to work with stolen phones. Seems to me there's going to be a lot of grabbing and stealing of phones, right? Okay. So, and here's the key. Now you think about it today. So that no one, now when Revelation says no one, it means no one anywhere in the world, okay, may have the ability to buy and sell unless he has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Now think about if you can't buy and sell. Think about if all of a sudden you woke up one morning, your bank account didn't have access, all of your credit cards were blanked out, and you had no money. And even if you had it, they didn't want to take it. Now that's total control. Now the Chinese are progressing toward that because they have the cell phone technology right now, and the Chinese are trying to digitize their currency, the yuan. Here's the report which says, digitize the dollar. They're even working on laws in Congress to do that. Now, why would that appear to be a good thing? Because it'll put it in such a way they will never have to pay off any borrowed money. Now, think about that. All right? Now, let's come to Revelation 9, okay? Revelation 9. We won't get to the scripture just yet, but you'll have it right there. Do you know what's going on in China all the way to Europe, all the way to the Middle East, and in Africa, all along East Africa? Here it is. You probably have heard something of it. The booming China Euro Rail network is taking the next step. Now, this report was filed in 2016. They have had 4 years of expanding it. And it shows the rails that go from China all the way into Europe. Now, when they get to Kazakhstan, the size of the gauge of the rails changes, because the gauge in China is different than the gauge in Europe. So they have big yards where they bring in these tremendous long trains, and then they have cranes to transfer the cargo. They're just like the ones they have on ships. And they lift them up and put them on the cars so they go to Europe. And they can do a whole train in 2 hours. Okay. This is called the Belt and Road, and there's many billions invested into it, and it shows quite a few of the pictures of it. Okay. Now, another one. China plans 30,000 kilometers of high-speed rail by 2020. This is also a 2016 report, and here's a picture of the train. Now, to show you where things are going, the Japanese have what they call maglev. Okay? Those are run by magnetics. Guess how fast they can go now per hour. 500 kilometers an hour, which then is about 375 miles an hour. Now think about that sitting on a train. I don't know if you could look out the window. I don't, what can you see except looking far off? You know, you look out, whoosh, there goes by a tree, whoosh, there goes by, you know, whatever. All right? Here's another report. All aboard Chinese-funded rail links, East Africa. And this one is from 2017. They have the rails already going. And guess what? An interesting part of this report. How many remember the thing concerning the World Health Organization and the man from Ethiopia who was real cozy and friendly with the Chinese and not exposing any of it? Okay, well, the Chinese build a rail from Addis Ababa down to the coast of the Red Sea, which then eliminated a five-day journey and reduced it to 12 hours on rail. Then they're building rails going all the way down the East Coast. Okay, now in addition to that, here's another project with the Chinese. And the Chinese have a lot of the money to do it. And where did they get the money? Well, from America giving them, let's put it this way, from the stupid trade deals that America made until Trump came on board. They made trillions and trillions of dollars. Okay? Now here's one. $200 billion worth of rail and metro projects planned in the Middle East. And all the countries there, they want to have that. Now, why are they focusing on trains? Here in America, we're focused on what? Cars. What is the plan? Well, AOC already told you. Get rid of cars. Get rid of oil. So the masses then have to move on the rails. All right? I have two other reports. The United States has been wanting to get out of Afghanistan, right? Remember that? Okay. Guess who's moving in? The neighbor next door. Now, China connects with Afghanistan through the Khyber Pass, and that's where the ancient Silk Road used to be. Okay? So here's an article. China and Afghanistan pledged to jointly promote Belt and Road Initiative. Now, why do they need the rails and the roads and the pipelines? We'll see in just a little bit. Okay. Now then, here's a very interesting article, which is May 5, 2020. China wraps up role in Afghanistan ahead of U.S. withdrawal. I'll read part of this report here, because this is interesting. And I think it was about 15 years ago, maybe not quite that far back, but at least 10 years ago, I suggested that the best way to get out of Afghanistan was make a deal with the Chinese. Let them come in. And guess what's happening today? That very thing. Now, why? And how does this fit into prophecy? Let me read from the report. As the United States and its allies begin what looks like the final withdrawal of their forces from Afghanistan, China appears to be expanding its role and influence in the country. They're already operating a big copper mine. Huh, what do you need copper for? All the digital equipment, right? Okay. Beijing is actively enhancing contracts, possibly building robust relations with the Afghan province in Kabul and the Taliban, visibly pushing for reconciliation between its longstanding ally, that is China's ally, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. Bring them together. Now, isn't that interesting? Okay. China is underpinning its diplomacy with prospects of greater trade and investment in the impoverished country. Now, question. How do you think that the Chinese are going to take care of the problem of the insurgents of the Taliban? They'll just kill them. Beijing is actively pursuing a close relationship with the Taliban, get them put down their arms, etc. Okay. As a neighbor and friend of Afghanistan, China represents the Afghan people's choice of their own development path and stands ready to continue to support, mediate, and facilitate peace and reconciliation process in Afghanistan and further play its constructive role. Okay? That's from the ambassador of China. Let me read the final link. Okay? And then we will go to Revelation 9. Because Revelation 9 and Revelation 16 will be fulfilled. But when you look at all of that area, and you look at how far back that all of that land area goes, you're going to understand why I'm going through all of this. Because what I'm going to read in this report here is the most significant prophetic development to take place in the fulfilling of the prophecies to carry out the things in the book of Revelation. All right? Here it is. China bails out Iran, turning the Islamic Republic into a Chinese colony. Now, you get a map, you look at, here comes China, Khyber Pass. Now, the Beltway Rail goes north of that into Kazakhstan and into Europe. There will be one coming through the Khyber Pass and through Afghanistan. But what is the missing link to get it to go all the way to Europe? Iran. In an 18-page document written by the Iranian Ministry of Foreign Affairs entitled Iran-China 25-Year Comprehensive Partnership Document, okay, in the agreement, China has agreed to invest $400 to $600 billion in Iranian infrastructure in exchange for dominance over Iran's natural resources, which is oil. And what does China need? Oil. Right? The document highlights the shared interests of both countries, the supply of crude oil, renewable energy, civilian nuclear energy, petroleum chemical products, and from an infrastructure perspective, the deal involves construction of railroads highways, maritime connection, banking cooperation with regards to local currency. So China is going to rescue Iran. Now, why is that important? Now, it's going to take time to do all of these things. Takes time to build roads. Takes time to build pipelines. That's what they're going to do. It takes time to get all of that done. Okay? So Revelation 9, verse 14. Now, where is the Euphrates River? That's one of the two main rivers in Iraq. What is the eastern border of Iraq? Iran. So the Chinese coming with all of this, they can go over the top of Iraq and connect with Syria. And then they can go, they already have it already proposed, go through Turkey and then on into Europe. Verse 14. And that an angel, it said to the sixth angel who had the trumpet, loose the four angels that are bound in the great river Euphrates. Then the four angels who had been prepared for an hour, a day, and a month. Now stop and think about that. That is a specific set time that this is going to happen. But what all has to be built up to make it possible is what I'm just reading to you. The rails, the roads, the pipelines, and a year were loosed that they might kill a third of the men. Now notice verse 16. And the number of the armies of the horsemen was 200,000. 200 million. 200 million. Now these armies will be strung out all the way to China, down to Southeast Asia. Eventually, India is going to be included in that. They're not now. But that means in order for these armies to come to the Middle East, they must come through what? Afghanistan and Iran and Iraq. Right? Now, how are they going to do it if it's not developed? How are they going to do it if there are no roads? How are they going to do it if there are no railways? Okay. 200 million, I heard the number of them. Okay. So this is the most significant development in prophecy that has happened recently. This completes the connection of everything back to China. Now, temporarily, this may mean that things will be a little better for America. We don't know. We just have to wait and see what's going to happen. Okay? Now then, let's go ahead and let's look at the prophecies coming up to this point right here that we just finished, because this is important. Okay? Now, let's come back to Revelation 13. Okay? Now, we know that right now, because of the actions of President Trump, the development of a one world order has been temporarily set back. But know for sure, all of the elite and all of the nations of the world who are behind this, they want it to happen. So when he's gone from the scene, watch what's going to take place. But let's read it here. Likewise, too, this has to take time to develop. And we will see that this brings us right down to the last 7 years. And then we'll go back and look at the prophecies in Daniel and see how that builds up from there. All right, verse 1. And I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns. That's the sign of Satan, the devil. You find that also in chapter 12. And on his horns, 10 crowns, and upon his head, the name of blasphemy. And the beast that I saw was like a leopard, and his feet like the feet of a bear, and his mouth, the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority, because Satan, the devil, is the god of this world. Okay? And I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death. Now, we'll talk about how that will come about a little later. But his deadly wound was healed, and the whole earth was amazed and followed the beast. You need to think about it when it says the whole earth. That's everybody, everywhere, except the true saints of God. And they worship the dragon. Now stop and think for just a minute. If the Pope says you can worship any of your gods that you want to, and who has started all of those religions? Satan the devil. Okay? And they worship the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worship the beast, saying, who is like the beast, and who has the power to make war against him? Now that's quite a statement, isn't it? Have men ever been able to not have war? What kind of power is it going to take so that it will be a deterrent for a while? We'll have to wait and see. Verse 5, and a mouth speaking great things and blasphemy was given to him, and authority was given to him to continue 42 months. Now, 42 months is half of 7 years. So this is talking about he receives the wound, he revives, and he continues for 3.5 years. And the false prophet is with him in it. Now we will see in Revelation 19 that 3.5 year period ends when the beast and false prophet are cast into the lake of fire. Okay? Quite a thing indeed. All right. So let's go back and put some other prophecies together. Let's come back to the book of Daniel. Daniel, the 9th chapter. The whole 70-week prophecy gives the time frame from Daniel clear to the end. We're in Daniel 9, and we will pick it up here in verse 27, okay? Because verse 27 tells us there in Daniel 9 that this prophetic week is actually 7 years. So let's read it. And he, that's the beast power of Revelation 13, and he shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week or 7 years. Now, this must be the covenant which fulfills the prophecy there. Who is able to make war against the beast? Okay. Now, why have this agreement? Well, other scriptures show that there is going to be a new temple built by the Jews. And if you go to templeinstitute.org or com, whatever it is, you can pick up all that the Jews have done in preparation for building the temple. But what are they going to need? Two things. Number one, the right location, because it won't be where the Mosque of Omar is. And if you don't have our DVD on where the temple was originally, then you request it, we'll send it to you. Because remember Jesus' prophecy that there would not be one stone left upon another when the temple would be destroyed. But if you look at the Western Wall, and over beyond that, you have what? The Mosque of Omar, and there are huge stones still standing one on top of another. So, in order to build the temple, they must have the right location. Number two, because of the hostility of the Muslims, they must have military protection to build it. So that will have to come. So we need to keep our eyes on that. But notice this. And in the midst of the week, 3.5 years. Now we'll see how that comes about in just a bit. He shall cause the sacrifice and offering to cease. And upon the wing of abomination shall come one who makes desolate. Now that's when the beast is revived from the wound. And the abomination is what? We'll see that in a minute. Even unto the consummation. So this brings us to the close of the age when Christ returns. And the fully determined end which is decreed shall be poured out upon the desolator, which then is the extermination of the beast. All right. Now, Matthew 24, we've covered this before, but this is what kicks off the last 3.5 years. Matthew 24. And let's pick it up here in verse 15. Therefore, when you shall see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken by Daniel the prophet, we just saw it. We just read it, right? Standing in the holy place. Now, what is the holy place? That's the Holy of Holies in the temple. Okay? Now then, notice this parenthetical statement. The one who reads, let him understand. Now, if you have a red letter Bible and that's red lettered as Jesus said it, that's incorrect because he didn't say that. The Apostle John, in finalizing the New Testament, put it there because he understood that when the temple in 70 AD was destroyed, there was no abomination of desolation that stood in the holy place. Okay? So he wrote this for all of us today, that as we read this, we need understanding. Okay? Why? Okay? Come down to verse 21. For then shall be great tribulation. That's what kicks off the great tribulation. Right there. Such as not have been from the beginning of the world until this time, nor ever shall be again. And if those days were not limited, there would be no flesh saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be limited. What are they limited to? 7 years, 3.5 and 3.5. All right, let's do this. Let's go ahead and take a 10-minute break, and we'll come back. Now let's continue on with where we left off. Now, why did John have to write that parenthetical statement? Well, it has to be this. John was given the vision in Revelation 11 about the two witnesses, and he was told to take a measuring rod and measure the temple area, but leave out the court, for that was given to the Gentiles. Okay. So in canonizing the New Testament, he knew from Matthew 24 that there had to be a temple in order for there to be an abomination of desolation, because there wasn't when it was destroyed in 70 AD. So when John was canonizing in the last part of the first century there, he was inspired to put that in to let us know that there would be a temple to come. And also, one of the greatest witnesses that he had was found here in 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter. Now, let's turn there, 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter, and let's understand because. Remember, it says in Revelation 13, we read it, that when the beast has the deadly wound healed, that all the world worships him. Why? Because he is the abomination that makes desolate. Let's read it. 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter. Now also understand this. During the ministry of the apostles, they were thinking that Jesus was going to return during their lifetimes. You'll pick up on that when we're reading this section here. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 1. Now we beseech you, brethren, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together to him, that you do not be quickly shaken in mind or be troubled, neither by spirit, nor by word, nor by epistle as if from us, saying that the day of Christ is present. Now, those are a lot of agencies coming after the knowledge of it. Verse 3. Do not let anyone deceive you by any means, because that day will not come unless the apostasy shall come first. Now, what is the apostasy? This is what we read in one of the reports. All religions together, all coming against true Christians, and the whole world government. That is the apostasy. And the man of sin now comes down to a man. So Revelation 13 talks about, number one, the system, and then number two, the man. And it was the man who received the deadly wound that was healed. So what does he do after the deadly wound was healed? Right here, 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter, tells us. It says, apostasy come first, and the man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, the one who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God, or that is an object of worship, so that he comes into the temple of God and sits down as God. And that has to be in the Holy of Holies of the coming temple, proclaiming himself that he himself is God. So at this point, he is directly possessed of Satan the devil. So he says, do you not remember that when I was still with you, I told you these things? Now this is very interesting, because this is the second epistle that Paul wrote. First one was 1 Thessalonians. And this has to be in 52 to 53 AD that this was written. So you can understand why John, when he was canonizing the New Testament, he had to put in that parenthetical statement in Matthew 24. Okay. So Paul writes, now you understand what is holding him back in order for him to be revealed in his own set time. So prophecy is going to be according to exact timing from God. Verse 7, for the mystery of lawlessness is already working. All the apostasy, there was apostasy back there. Jews coming after them, pagans coming after them, and so he's making note of it. Only there is one who is restraining at the present time until it arises out of the midst. And that's clear down to our day. Okay? And then the lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and will destroy with the brightness of his coming. So this ties right in with Revelation 19, right? Okay. Now notice, even the one who's coming is according to the inner working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in those who are perishing because they did not receive the love of the truth so that they might be saved. Now then, at the time that he goes into the temple to make it an abomination of desolation, who are already on the scene? The two witnesses. Okay? So let's go back to Revelation 11. Hold your place here for just a minute. We'll go back. Revelation 11. Now, if you don't have our Revelation Daniel series, be sure and request it. We'll send it to you. Verse 1. Let's go through this and let's understand as we go through. Then the angel gave me a measuring rod like a staff, saying, arise and measure the temple of God. So here is John's dilemma. God gave him a vision that there had to be a temple of God, but the temple had been destroyed. So in order for anyone to understand what Jesus meant in Matthew 24, he had to put in that parenthetical statement, the one who reads, let him understand. Okay? Saying, arise, measure the temple of God and the altar and those who worship in it. But leave out the court within the temple area and do not measure it, because it has been given up to the Gentiles, and they shall trample upon the holy city 42 months. Now, that is equivalent to 3.5 years, but I want you to notice the difference. 42 months is always used for 3.5 years of evil. The days, the 1260, as we will see, for the two witnesses, is for righteousness. Then he says, verse 3, and I will give power to my two witnesses. Who will they be? We can know this for sure. Won't be anyone from the church. We'll look at Zechariah in just a little bit. Because God is the one who selects them unilaterally. Okay? My two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth. These are the two olive trees and the two lampstands that stand before the God of the earth. Okay? No? Let's go back to Zechariah 3. And let's learn who the two witnesses will be. And we will see how this all fits together. Okay? Because it's going to be quite a time when it happens. Okay? Now, we have, with the series on Daniel and Revelation, we have a great big chart putting all the prophecies together with the seven last years and showing the 2 3.5 years. And it's all based on a calculated Hebrew calendar. Now, just a little sidebar on the difference between 42 months and 1260 days. Every Hebrew calendar, calculated Hebrew calendar, the months run this way. 30 days, 29. 30, 29. 30, 29. That's why the 1260 days do not exactly equal 42 months. Okay? One is by days, the other is by months. All right, let's come to Zechariah 3. Okay? Zechariah 3 and verse 1. And he showed me Joshua the high priest standing before the angel of the Lord, and Satan standing at his right hand to resist him. Now, this original Joshua was one of the high priests when they built the second temple. Okay? And the Lord said to Satan, may the Lord rebuke you, Satan, and may even the Lord who has chosen Jerusalem rebuke you. Is this not a brand plucked out of the fire? Now, that's an interesting expression. That means saved from permanent death. See? So here's the high priest. God reaches down and calls him. Now, he's got to give up everything with Judaism. Now, Joshua was clothed with filthy garments and stood before the angel, and he answered and spoke to those who stood before him, saying, take the filthy garments from off him. And he said to him, behold, I have caused your iniquity to pass from you, and I will clothe you with ceremonial robes. Now, those ceremonial robes will be what? Revelation 11? Sackcloth. Set a clean miter on him, and they set a clean miter on his head, clothed him with garments, and so forth. That was for the priest at that time. And the angel of the Lord charged Joshua, saying, thus says the Lord of hosts, if you will walk in my ways, and if you will keep my charge. Now, isn't that what it is with all of us? You know, the if we love God, if we keep his commandments. Yes, indeed. Then you shall also judge my house and shall keep my courts, and I will give you places to walk among those who stand by. Hear now, O Joshua the high priest, and your fellows who sit before you, for you are men wondered at. Behold, I will bring forth my servant, the branch, who is Christ. This is Christ's return. Okay? Behold, the stone that I have set before Joshua, on one stone are seven eyes, and behold, I will engrave its engravings upon it, says the Lord of hosts, and I will remove the iniquity of the land in one day, that is after Christ returns. In that day, says the Lord of hosts, you shall call each man to his neighbor and sit under the vine and under the fig tree. What is this talking about? This is talking about the millennium. So that's after Christ returns and establishes the millennium. All right? Now, chapter 4, verse 1. And the angel that talked with me came again and awakened me as a man that is awakened out of his sleep. And he said to me, what do you see? And I said, I see, and behold, a lampstand, all of it gold, and a bowl on its top, and seven lamps upon it, and seven pipes to the seven lamps on its top. Now, this is different because, see, a lot of people think that this is the menorah. This is not the menorah. Now notice verse 3. And the two olive trees beside it. Where did we have the two olive trees we just read about? Revelation 11. Describing the two witnesses, right? Yes. One on the right side of the bowl, the other on the left side of it. And I answered and spoke to the angel who talked with me, saying, What are these, my Lord? And the angel who talked with me answered and said to me, Do you know what these are? And I said, No, my Lord. And he answered and spoke to me, saying, This is the word of the Lord to Zerubbabel, saying, Not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, says the Lord of hosts. Okay? Now, what are two lowly little witnesses going to do against all the power of the beast? See? That's what it's really saying prophetically. Notice the next verse. Who are you, O great mountain, before Zerubbabel? You shall become a plain. Now, who is the great mountain? That's the beast power. And he shall bring forth the head of the stone with shouting, Grace, grace unto it. That's the return of Christ. And the word of the Lord came to me, saying, The hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this house. Okay? Now, this is the second temple. So, Zerubbabel was who? He was the governor of Judea. So, this tells us who the two witnesses will be. One will be the high priest from the temple that they're going to construct and build and have go up and going. And the other will be the governor of Judea. And they come into office just before, if you write for the Daniel Revelation series and get the chart, you will see it is just before the beast power goes into the temple. The hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of the house. His hands shall also finish it. And he shall know the Lord of hosts who has sent me to you. For who has despised the day of small things? For they shall rejoice and see the plummet in the hand of Zerubbabel. These seven are the eyes of the Lord which run to and fro through the whole earth. Now, who controls the seven eyes? Jesus Christ does. Revelation 1:4, Revelation 3:1, Revelation 5. Okay? And I answered and said to him, What are these two olive trees on the right side of the lampstand and on the left side? All right, here is the answer to Revelation 11. Where it says, these are the two olive trees that stand before the Lord of the whole earth. And I answered again and said to him, What are the two olive branches beside the two golden pipes emptying golden oil out of themselves? And he answered and said, Do you not know what these are? And I said, No, my Lord. Now notice, a clear definition to understand Revelation 11, verse 14. And he said, These are the two anointed ones who stand by the Lord of the whole earth. Now, we've had many people come along and say, Well, these are the two witnesses. Remember we heard that in the church? The Father and the Son were the two witnesses. In addition, they were Ezekiel on the wall. Okay. So God is the one who's going to choose the two witnesses. And they are going to do what God wants them to do. All right. Now let's come back here to Revelation 11 again. And let's see how that's going to be. You talk about the day of small things, two men compared to the beast power and all of his armies and everything that he has are nothing. But they're the two olive trees of God sent to witness. And this is the last witness. And this is going to be the witness that's going to what? Be a major factor in converting the 144,000 and great innumerable multitude. Okay? Why? Let's see what they do. Verse 4. These are the two olive trees and the two lampstands that stand before the God of the earth. Almost an identical repetition of Zechariah 4. Now notice verse 5. And if anyone attempts to harm them, fire will go out of their mouths and destroy their enemies. Now think how frustrating this is going to be. And for 1260 days, they're going to what? Try and kill the two witnesses. But they won't be able to. Now, where do we find fire coming down from God and destroying the enemies with one of the prophets of God? With Elijah. Okay? If anyone attempts to harm them, he must be killed in this manner. These have authority. Now look at the authority that they have. Fantastic authority. To shut heaven up so that no rain may fall in the days of their prophecy. They have authority over the waters to turn them to blood and smite the earth with every plague as often as they will. Now think what a tremendous thing this is going to be against the beast. Here he is, ruling the whole world, having conquered everything, being resurrected from the dead, from the deadly wound, was healed, and everyone is worshiping him as God. He comes into the temple of God and sits down as God and says he is God, but he can't touch the two witnesses. That's quite a thing. Now, verse 7, and when they have completed their testimony, the beast who arises out of the abyss shall make war against them and shall overcome them and will kill them. Now, we'll come back to this in a little bit. Okay? So let's bring everything up to this point. Let's come back to Revelation, the 6th chapter. We already covered the first seal. Now let's understand something really important about the events in the end time. Okay? Nothing is done unless God the Father gives Christ permission. And that permission starts with opening the first seal. We've already covered that. United religions. And think of what a euphoria this is going to be. Here there's going to, remember what it says? They're going to have peace, peace. They're going to be building. They're going to be planting. They're going to be marrying, giving in marriage, just like it was when Noah entered into the ark. That's how the coming of the Son of Man is going to be. So here they are. They have their armies, they have their power, they have all of these things. So let's pick it up with the second seal. Verse 3, Revelation 6. When he opened the second seal, I heard the second living creature say, "Come and see." And another horse went out, that was red, and power was given to him, was given to the one sitting on it to take peace from the earth. Okay? Now, when does that happen? Okay? Hold your place here, and let's go back to Daniel 11. Okay? Daniel 11. Because it tells us when it's going to take place. Now, let's pick it up in verse 36, because this tells us about the coming beast power. Now, isn't it interesting? We have the book of Revelation, which prophesies the exact events. We have the Old Testament, which gives us the preliminary setting. Okay? Verse 36. And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt and magnify himself above every god. Where did we read that? 2 Thessalonians 2, right? And shall speak astonishing things against the God of gods, and shall prosper until the indignation is accomplished, for that which is decreed shall be done. Now, here's a lesson to learn in reading the Bible. The Bible, in many, many instances, gives us a summary of what's happening, what's going to happen, and then it gives us the details of how it happens. Okay? Summary first, then the details. Verse 37. And he will not regard the gods of the fathers, nor the desire of women, nor any god, for he shall magnify himself above all. And in his place, he shall honor the God of forces. Who is the God of forces? Satan the devil. And not a God who his fathers did not know, shall he honor with gold and silver and precious stones and costly things. So he shall deal against the fortresses of the strongest with a strange God, and whom he shall acknowledge, and shall increase with glory, and he shall cause them to rule over many, and shall divide the land for a price. And at the time of the end, okay, this tells us when it will be. What is the time of the end? The last 7 years. 3.5? 3.5. Okay? So let's see if we can get a little time setting on this. The king of the south shall push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots, with horsemen, with many ships. He shall enter into the countries, he shall overthrow and sweep through. He shall enter into the glorious land, that's into Palestine. And what is in Jerusalem at this time? The temple. Okay. And many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand, Edom, Moab, the chief children of Ammon. He shall also stretch his hand out upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. And he shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver and over all precious things of Egypt. And the Libyans and Ethiopians shall be at his steps. But things out of the east and out of the north shall alarm him. Okay, we've seen what's going to happen in the east, right? With China, Afghanistan, Iran, coming all the way to the Eastern Mediterranean, okay? The king of the north is going to come rise up out of Europe. So that has yet to happen. And in this case, it's also going to include, without a doubt, Eastern Europe. And remember, Europe has rarely amounted to anything unless there is a dictator that brought the nations together. You can go back and you can start with Napoleon and then Bismarck and then Hitler, so forth. So that will have to come. And he shall plant his royal tent between the seas in the glorious holy mountains. yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. So that's when he goes there. So what will probably happen is this. When he first comes into Jerusalem, he's going to stop the sacrifices. How are the Jews going to react? Well, they're going to want to get rid of him and kill him, right? Is that how he gets his deadly wound? The Jews come after him because he stopped the sacrifices? Very likely. Okay. The two witnesses are there also. So, what does he do when he's revived back? He goes into the Holy of Holies of the temple that the Jews are going to build and say that he is God. Now, that's when, come back to Revelation, the sixth chapter, this is when the second seal is opened. And they're going to come out from there, war over a fourth part of the earth. What part of the earth that will be, I don't know. But somehow, that's got to figure in the modern descendants of Israel. Because we read that the children of Israel will be in captivity. And we know they will because of the 144,000. Okay? So, let's pick it up here. Went out to make war. Okay? Take peace from the earth. That's an interesting statement, isn't it? What does this tell us? This tells us, in the lead up to all of this, before it all breaks loose, there's going to be a peace. Then it comes to an end. And caused them to kill one another with a great sword was given to him. He opened the third seal and heard the third living creature say, "Come and see." And I looked, and behold, there was a black horse, and the one sitting on him had a balance in his hand. And I heard a voice in the midst of four living creatures say, "A measure of wheat for a silver coin, three measures of barley for a silver coin, and see that you do not damage the oil or the wine." And when he opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the four living creatures say, "Come and see." And I looked, and behold, there was a pale horse. Now, what happens when there's war? Death, destruction, famine, starvation. See? So that's what this is all about. And the name of the one sitting on it was Death, and the grave followed him, and authority was given to them over one-fourth of the earth to kill with the sword and with famine and with death and with the beast of the earth. Okay? When that happens, what do they want to do? Who's to blame? Well, we'll be to blame. The true Christians will be blamed. And then the fifth seal is a martyrdom of the true Christians. Because they will think if they can kill all the Christians, then everything's going to be fine. But it won't be. Okay? Because when that happens, then the most astounding thing to occur in the history of the world is going to take place. The sixth seal. Verse 12. When he opened the sixth seal, I looked, and behold, there was a great earthquake. And the sun became black as the hair of sackcloth, and the moon became as blood, and the stars of heaven fell to the earth, as a fig tree cast its untimely figs when it's shaken with a mighty wind. Then the heavens departed like a scroll. Vroom! What are they going to see? Well, they'll see the sign of the Son of Man, which Jesus says in Matthew 24, will shine from east to west, which means they will all of a sudden see what looks like a second sun. And at first they're going to think it's Christ returning, but then later Satan will convince them to believe that these are invaders from outer space. Okay? So what did they do? Then the kings of the earth and the great men, the rich men, the chief captains, the powerful men, every bondman, every free man, hid themselves in the caves and in the rocks of the mountains and said to the mountains and rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb, for the great day of his wrath is come. Who has the power to stand? Now that's quite a thing, isn't it? Huh? Just think about everything that's going on the earth with this going on. And the two witnesses with their witness that they are giving. And then the martyrdom of the saints. Okay? Now, why does God have a few in a place of safety? Why kill all of them here, but have a few in a place of safety, and that's before the 144,000? Why? Because Jesus gave a promise that the gates of the grave would never prevail against the church. That's why. Okay. Then after that, there's a great calm. And a lot of repenting people. The 144,000 and the great innumerable multitude. All going to be sealed. All converted. Okay? And then the rest of chapter 7 shows that they will, at the resurrection, be before the throne of God. Okay? Now then, chapter 8, and this will bring us up to where we started in chapter 9. Now, let's understand this as we read it. Verse 1. When he opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about a half hour. Then I saw seven angels stand before God, and seven trumpets were given to them. Okay? Now, these trumpets are blown in sequence. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And the seventh one is the last trump. No place in the entirety of the Bible do you find where there is a sequence of blowing of trumpets that you can say the last trumpet, referring to the seventh one and the resurrection. Just a little sidebar on that, okay? And another angel had a golden censer and came and stood before the altar with much incense was given to him so that he might offer with the prayers of all the saints that are on the golden altar that was before the throne. All right? There are a lot of prayers going up to God at that time. Why? Because you got the 144,000 great innumerable multitude, right? Are they not saints if they have the Spirit of God? So the most that are converted are those that are converted in the sealing of the 144,000 great innumerable multitude. Greater than all the work down through history. That's an amazing thing when you contemplate it. Okay? Then we have the first four woes come very quickly. Then we come to chapter 9, and we end up where we started, at the Euphrates River. And how do the mass hordes get from the rising of the sun, the kings of the east, come all the way to the river Euphrates, and God dries it up so they can pass over it? That's quite a thing to contemplate, isn't it? Well, it's all being prepared now. So the question remains, how much time do we have? We don't know. God has the time schedule. But in order for these armies to come, they've got to have a means to get there, right? And so with this agreement with the Chinese, together with what the Chinese have already done with Afghanistan, is going to prepare the way with rails, with roads, with pipelines, with everything that they need to move the armies of 200 million. So we'll call it a day for today. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Remember, the first and third Sabbath will have live streaming.